Then, a strange piercing sound rang out from the front war wag, and the bikers stopped shooting to cover their faces and turn away. Perplexed by the sight, Thomas saw the rest of the people behind the windows and weapon blisters do the same, as the odd horn sounded twice more in warning. Purely on impulse, he copied their posture, daring to peek between clenched fingers. Then the Outlanders stopped attacking as something cycled up from the roof of the lead transport, a bizarre blaster with cables and thick hoses hissing snowy clouds. As a sharply pitched whine built to painful levels, there was an audible crackle of power. Blue electric sparks flashed between contact points, and the muzzle of the weapon spewed forth a shimmering energy beam of blinding brilliance that swept along the top of the wall, setting fire to everything it touched. Bathed in the lethal radiance, the Sekhmen's clothing and hair burst into flames, and they started to scream. Then the beam touched the barrels of black powder, and powerful explosions rocked the walls, sending cracks along its entire length. Thomas could only stare helplessly as the cannons broke free from their shattered moorings and rolled away, crushing more guards and scattering the supplies of powder and shrapnel. As the beam moved onward, Thomas stood and tried to shoot his long blaster at the energy gun, but his vision was blurred by a moon shadow. Turning, the Elder tried to get away, but no matter in which direction he turned, his right side was still covered by darkness. It took several moments for him to finally understand. He was blind in that eye. By the First Elder, that was why the Outlanders covered their faces at the sound of the warning horn. For the first time in his life, cold fear seized the canny lord, and he suddenly had the feeling that they could lose this battle. His mind whirled at the concept. This was Hell's Gate, the strongest villain in Texas. Nothing could breach their defenses. Nothing! But the sizzling beam bathed across the wall again, and Thomas dove behind the palisade, feeling the heat of its passage only feet above. From somewhere came sporadic blaster fire, then the high-pitched cries of people caught in the death ray. Very cautiously, Thomas stole a glance and saw a human torch run blindly by and go right over the wall, the ammo in his gun belt igniting from the heat even as he fell to his death. They were beaten, Thomas realized, feeling hollow and empty, his courage and strength seeping away like blood from a deep wound. The elders, the cannons, nothing could stop this pre-dark weapon. It was the end of the world. Then the beam winked out, and darkness blew over the ville like a blessing from the storm gods. Desperately crawling on his belly, Thomas reached a ladder and started down, when he noticed a group of elders rush to the burning ruin of the gate, armed with four lengths of stovepipe. No, wait, it was the bazookas. Yes, that would stop the war machines. They would be victorious yet. As the youngest cannies clumsily loaded fat rockets into the rear of the tubes, the oldest men knelt amid the refuse covering the ground and aimed directly for the center of the billowing cloud of smoke filling the hole in their wall. Thomas knew that the moment the lead wag appeared, it would be hit with enough explosives to stop a fleet of war wags. The wreckage could block the advance of the other wags, and the fight would be equal once more. With more shields held before them, the cannies could rally behind the bazookas and chase the Outlanders into the sea. Just then, a salvo of rockets stabbed from the smoke and spread wide to hit randomly inside the ville, blowing up the last of the greenhouse and removing the corner of the Elder's mansion. The building noisily collapsed as a wave of fire swept through the interior. Although badly rattled, the Elder still fired the bazookas, two of the homemade rockets hitting the remains of the gate and one arching straight up into the starry sky. The backblast from that tube ignited the clothing of a teenager carrying spare rockets. Wildly shrieking, the lad dropped the ammo seconds before the rockets exploded, blowing him to pieces. Moments later, the big war wag rolled through the smoky ruin of the gate, its every weapon blowing lead and death. Retreating behind the pile of rubble that had been the guard tower, the last remaining elders frantically regrouped and launched the bazookas once more, bright stilettos of flame stabbing through the night. The rockets hit the wheeled tank in a double explosion that deafened Thomas, and shrapnel sprayed outward from the twin strikes. Hot pain blossomed in his arm and stomach, but Thomas didn't duck for cover. Live or die, he just had to see what was happening. Silence filled the ville for a heartbeat as the ever-present sea wind cleared the air. As the smoke thinned, Thomas bit back a scream as he saw the thick armor of the mighty war wag barely dented from the impact of the homemade rockets. If a blister had been hit, the tide of battle would have changed. But the wags had rushed too fast, making the elders miss their one chance, and now it was too late. Belching halos of fire, the Gren launchers of the war wags started thumping, throwing explosive charges with deadly accuracy. The elders were blown apart, the bazookas smashed into trash. A group of eunuchs struggling to roll a huge barrel of black powder with a sizzling fuse toward the machine were cut to ribbons, and the corpses lay there until the charge detonated, blowing them sky high. With revving engines, the war wag lurched into motion, moving into the bill and unleashing total destruction. The bikers came next, rolling into doorways with their rapid fire spitting lead. Then a second wag entered the bill, but the third parked in the open gateway and aced anybody trying to get out. They were trapped in their own bill like slaves in a pit. The madness threatened to steal his mind, and Thomas scurried for cover behind the fallen barrel of the second cannon as the heavy tires of the war wag rolled close by, cracking the bones of dead guards under their weight. The noise made him sick, and he fought not to vomit. More rockets from the war wag slammed into the distant guard tower, crumbling the structure like a dried sandcastle, and the enemy machine guns never seemed to stop, ruthlessly killing anybody carrying a blaster. Then, from nowhere, a shiny glass bottle arced high in the moonlight to crash onto a war wag, drenching it with sticky fire. Caught near an air vent, a man inside the wag started to scream as he burst into flames and dropped out of sight behind the window. The Sekhmen of Hellsgateville cheered at the death, then instantly stopped as all three of the vehicles shook as they fired a massed volley of missiles and grens. The fiery dart slammed through the pre-dark brick buildings and detonated with nightmarish force, grens falling everywhere. Broken bodies went flying as rolling tongues of orange flame rose from the collapsing structures. Wiggling deeper into a hole underneath the cannon, Thomas smeared dirt on his face to help hide his presence, pausing as a war wag brake to a halt only yards away. He could feel the heat from the blasters and smell the reek of juice and gunpowder. Then there came the soft sigh of hydraulics as a thick door cycled down from the side of the vehicle and a woman strode down the stairs with a large blaster in one hand and a squat box in the other. Tall and blonde, she was pale but well-fed, wearing a battered Stetson hat, a neckerchief around her throat, dangling down the front to hide her sweaty cleavage. A tooled gun belt rode snug on her belled hips, a boxy rapid fire was slung over her shoulder, and a bandolier of grens was strapped across her chest. Standing with her back to the hidden man, the blonde holstered the weapon and started to talk into a green box, a shiny silver stick rising from the top, reflecting the beams of the headlights. She walked through the destruction, but always kept her back to the war wag for safety.
Confirmed. The eastern guns are down. Concentrate on the cliff.
From across the courtyard, a group of the motorcycles raced by, going in that direction, bounding over the bodies in rubble with frightening speed. Crouching low in the dirt, Thomas couldn't believe it. They obeyed as if hearing her commands. Obviously, the box somehow relayed her voice to the bikers. Could this be their leader? Thomas thought in growing amazement. Was this the legendary traitor? Praise be to the storm gods and the first elder for delivering the enemy into his waiting hands. With her as a hostage, the battle would be over. Sliding the .38 Colt from his belt, Thomas eased back the hammer, covering it with his other hand to muffle the click until it locked into position. But there had to have been some noise because the blonde started to turn his way with a blaster in hand. No time to try for a capture. He would have to chill her on the spot. So be it. Quickly raising the blaster, Thomas aimed for her belly. Gushing blood from the ragged stump of its neck, the headless body of Elder Thomas flopped lifeless to the ground, the Colt discharging a single shot as it tumbled over the paving stones to land near Kate's combat boots. Kate turned to see Roberto standing in the doorway of War Wag 1, a smoking shotgun in his good hand. Kate holstered her piece.
Thanks. I owe you.
Always got your back, Chief.
The double barrels of Roberto's sawed-off swept the area for any new targets. Kate spoke into the radio, her command repeated from the loudspeaker set in the hull of War Wag 1 and echoing across the mounting turmoil of the smashed ville.
Okay, I want people over at the holding pits to start freeing the slaves.
They'll want revenge, you know. not only on their former masters, but any of their fellow slaves who worked for the Cannies. It could get damn messy.
Her face a mask of controlled hate, Kate looked over the battleground, the dead and the dying mixed with the rubble and refuse.
Let them have their revenge, then. What's the status of the laser?
We're almost out of fuel for the reaction chamber. Plus, a few more minutes of use and the main lens would have cracked. It's just not designed for this kind of fighting.
But it did the job. Give Eric my thanks. That man works miracles.
Just then, a ricochet zinged off the armored prow of the wag only inches from the woman. Instantly, Roberto fired his shotgun at the distant sniper, and Kate dropped the radio to draw the Ingram and hosed a long burst from the rapid fire. Fighting to clear a jam from his bolt action, the cold heart on the rooftop got stitched across the chest by the 9mm Parabellum rounds and fell away, spraying bright blood. Roberto grunted at the sight.
Good shot. Bastard was out of my range.
Can't control a rapid fire with one hand.
Kate bent over to retrieve the radio.
All gunners, secure this courtyard. I want every roof cleaned of SecMen, and I mean right fucking now.
Every gunner inside the three armored transports did as requested, and the crisscrossing barrage of 50 caliber rounds from the vented machine guns tore the roofs apart, shattering the red tiles, and sending two more snipers to the last train west. Finally, a voice reported crisply over the radio.
Roofs are secured.
Good. Jeffers, Daniels, Dink, start a wreck of the buildings and watch for booby traps. The locals are fond of traps. Be safe and shoot everybody you find.
All of them?
Confirmed. If they ain't in chains, put lead in their head.
Will do, Chief.
Roberto stayed close to the woman, the sawed-off held level at his waist with both hands.
Knives are cheaper.
She shrugged in reply.
Fuck it. We got the ammo. Besides, I'll damn well not lose another one of our people cleaning out this viper's nest. 10 rounds now will save us 100 in the future.
There was a scrambling motion at the base of a second guard tower, and from the gaping doorway stumbled a bloody man in robes with both hands raised. Roberto fired before Kate could even register the fact, and as he fell, the canny elder was then torn apart by crisscrossing blaster fire from a dozen directions.
Standard divvy among the dead?
Roberto tightened his lips into what could have been a grin as he reloaded again. The 12-gauge sawed-off did a nuking amount of damage, but he was always shoving in shells. Too bad there wasn't such a thing as a clip-fed shotgun. Wouldn't that be the kicker?
Not this time. We turn the entire contents of the vill over to the slaves. They earned it in ways we don't want to think about. Then we divvy half of our food with them, too. Toss everything found in the kitchens and storehouses into the sea. It's all dirty. Who knows what they use to bake the bread or fry the fish in.
Maybe human fat, Roberto comprehended, going queasy. Dark night. He never would have thought about that. He swallowed hard.
Good call, Chief. I'll see it done personally. But we're still taking shine and fuel, right?
Removing her hat, Kate fanned away the smoke from the burning buildings. The fumes carried a reek of burning flesh that made her cringe.
Damn straight. All we can carry. From here, we can finally risk a journey to the north.
Roberto frowned. By that, she meant across the Great Salt, a hell zone considered by many to be the bleeding ass of the Deathlands with its radstorms, quicksand, tornadoes, muties, and worst of all, the Scorpion God. Sounded like the slaves were free and already equaling some old scores.
Be a mighty good day when we ace the Scorpion. A lot of debts to be paid there, too.
Kate tucked her hat back on her head.
More than you know.